والله يدعو إلى دار السلام ويهدي من يشاء إلى صراط مستقيم.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I praise Allah, the Creator of the heavens and the earth, and I send peace and blessings to all of the prophets, and especially to the last prophet Muhammad, forever. And I begin with the greeting words of the righteous, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. The Muslim world was able to lead the planet in science and technology and most aspects of learning between the 7th to the 17th century AD. Disciplines such as optics, astronomy, history, geography, medicine were part of the curriculum that Islamic scholars studied throughout the world. And when we look at the nature of the religion of Islam, we find that Muslims were naturally oriented towards success in science. In astronomy, we find that Muslims were naturally inclined to finding direction. The prayer itself that Muslims partake in at least 5 times per day is based upon the direction of the Qibla, the direction that the person praying has toward Mecca. And so wherever you are as a Muslim, you have to find, is Mecca to the south? Is it to the north? Is it to the east or is it to the west? So every Muslim, young or old, is engaged in direction. Also, once in a lifetime, the believer is encouraged to make the pilgrimage to Mecca. In order to go to the pilgrimage, you have to know the direction of Mecca. You have to organize yourself. You have to have the ability to travel. And so it was a natural outcome of the teachings of Islam itself that propelled Muslims in the areas of astronomy, geography, and navigation. In geography, there are astonishing achievements. The first almanacs, the first world atlas, the first encyclopedias. It is said in the 9th century, Ibn Khirzdaba even wrote the first roadmap atlas. Yaqut, who died in 1229, wrote a dictionary of countries, a mu'jam of all of the countries in the world. Al-Mas'udi drew a map of the world somewhere around 957 AD. And surprisingly enough, on this map, he actually had the Americas. We find in Arabic that it says Ard Majhula, unknown territory. And we see a huge continent that could only have been a reflection of the presence of the Americas. In the 7th century, Muslims knew the roundness of the earth. Great explorers came out of the Muslim world and traveled throughout the planet. It is reported that Ibn Battuta, Rahimahullah, the great scholar and Islamic traveler, in the 1300s, traveled over 75,000 miles. He crossed into distant continents. He was able to go through the barriers of language, the barriers of culture, and he was united through his faith. Al-Idrisi was the top map maker of the Middle Ages. He was the first one to really organize map making and to bring about a set of accurate maps. And it is reported in the 12th century that he was commissioned to make a globe for Roger II, the king of Sicily, and he succeeded. Even Christopher Columbus himself, when we look honestly and objectively at his memoirs, we find that he was inspired by the maps of El Idrisi. We also find, when we look at the Portuguese explorers who set out, that Vasco da Gama, who navigated Africa and went around the Cape of Good Hope, that he actually based his movements on Islamic maps, and he also carried the astrolabe, and it is reported that he hired a navigator, Ibn Majid, who showed him the way around the Cape and how to maneuver into the Indian Ocean and help the Portuguese to succeed in this major journey that they took. And so we find in all of the journeys, the basis of just about all of the so-called discoveries during the age of the Renaissance, behind this were Arabic writings, Muslim navigators, Muslim geographers, and sometimes literally the people on the boats themselves. When historians objectively look at Al-Mas'udi, they find that the writings of Al-Mas'udi were much more comprehensive than Marco Polo himself. Europe was astonished at the information brought to them by Marco Polo about India and China. But when we look at the writings of Al-Mas'udi, we find not only Africa, Asia, Europe, the Middle East, but we even find reports that show us that Al-Mas'udi even had a connection with America. But the most astonishing achievement of this age was the development of the magnetic needle. This was the first true compass that was ever made. After this, Muslims developed the sextant, the quadrant, the astrolabe. They were able to literally outfit the ships and enable explorers and conquerors to travel around the world. But unfortunately, with all of this glory, with these astounding achievements that Muslims made, almost no credit is given to their work. Arabic names were systematically taken out of the dictionaries, and the true understanding of what happened in the so-called Dark Ages was lost to the world. The reality is, and was, this was not a dark age. This was actually the golden age of Islam. And Muslims were able to travel to the far corners of the planet. Shockingly for many people, Muslims were actually able to cross the Atlantic and reach America long before Christopher Columbus. We have learned in early parts of our series that Christopher Columbus claimed to have discovered America, that he was actually on his way to India. He thought that he would meet the great Khan, and his chief navigator, Rodrigo, could speak the Arabic language. Christopher Columbus knew that Muslims had made journeys to the far distant points in the planet. If you read his memoirs, you'll see that Columbus went north first to the area of Iceland, and then he came down into West Africa. He went to the Canary Islands off the coast of Senegal, and he witnessed large dugout boats that were leaving the coast of West Africa and following the currents and going into the Americas. So Columbus knew that there was land across the ocean. It was not a total discovery in the sense that he had previous knowledge. We need to be objective with this. And if we look at writings in the Arabic language made by some of these great geographers and scientists, we recognize that Muslims had actually recorded journeys to America. Around 956, Al-Mas'udi, Abul Hasan Al-Mas'udi, rahimahullah, wrote in his Muruj al-Dhahab, a famous book of geography. he wrote about the journey of a young man who left Cordoba and went into the Atlantic Ocean. His name was Khashkhas ibn Sa'id al-Aswad. And he went into the Atlantic Ocean, according to this report. He crossed the Atlantic. He made contact with the people on the other side. And he returned somewhere around 889 AD. This report shocked the people of Cordoba. It shocked the people of Al-Andalus, and it was shared by people all throughout their lands. We also find another shocking report by Abu Bakr ibn Umar al-Quttiyya. In 999, he speaks about that in 999, Ibn Farukh visited the Canary Islands, and then he continued on his journey west, and he found a set of islands, and then he returned. Al-Idrisi, one of the great geographers in history and the leading map maker in the 11th century, in his famous geography book, makes a detailed report about the journey of seafarers who left from the shores of Al-Andalus and North Africa, and they went into the ocean. It is reported that 8 seafarers left the shores of Lisbon, now what is now known as Portugal. They went into the Sea of Darkness, the Atlantic Ocean. They found great turbulence, and they landed, or they went onto a type of river moving in the ocean itself. It carried them for a number of days until they knew not where they were. Finally, they reached an island with nothing on it. They then went to another island and they found people. They were captured by these people and put into chains. They were blindfolded and taken to a king who had a translator speaking the Arabic language. This king informed them that their journey was a true journey and that the distance between them and their home was about 2 months. This is a shocking report, and it shows us that Muslims had actually crossed the Atlantic and entered into what today is known as the Caribbean region, probably landing on the Bahamas. But even more shocking, what we find in this report is that the king already had somebody who could speak Arabic. So that means that Arabic-speaking people had made it across, established themselves, and taught the people how to speak Arabic long before the 11th century. Shocking information for those who base their history upon Christopher Columbus. But we recognize that it is important in this age that we look at history from all points of view. We understand that there were people who were on the shore when Columbus landed. We should understand that even it is recognized in history that the Vikings, that Leif Erikson, made it to America from the north. That there were other people who crossed the Atlantic. It was not the first time when Christopher Columbus landed, but a series of people were able to go across. Muslims were able to record their information in the Arabic language. Muslims were able to deliver the message and to leave a record that will be read by people throughout the planet. Let us take a break and come back to more astounding information about Muslims in America before Columbus.
And if you look into the early tafsir, early exegesis of the Quran, you will find that all the mufassirin were trying to find out where are the 7 earths. Earthquakes, natural or artificial, can delineate the boundaries between 7 different zones within the earth. The conclusion that we have 7 different layers within the earth came to not only the 20th century. The true believer would prostrate down in obedience to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The blessings of that prostration will reach the 7th earth.
In the year 1517 AD, a famous Turkish navigator and mapmaker named Piri Reis brought a special set of maps to the Ottoman Sultan Selim I. What we find today is astonishing information on these maps. The maps were drawn approximately in 1513. And we find not only detailed information of the South American coastline, but we also find accurate latitude and longitude between Africa and South America. These maps, and especially the map of South America, is hard evidence of the presence of Muslims in this region. Because by 1513, Columbus could not have had this information. Remember, Columbus's journey was in 1492, and he was the first European explorer to reach these lands. This map was drawn in 1513. How could they have drawn detailed maps of the South American coastline without having been there previously? We also find on the map the Andes Mountains of Peru. And the first European conqueror to reach this region was Pizarro, who reached approximately in 1527. So how could this be possible? How could Muslims have crossed the ocean? With what technology? In the past, people would have said, it's impossible unless you are in the Nina and the Pinta and the Santa Maria of Christopher Columbus, you don't have this technology. Unless your map maker came from Portugal or Spain or from Italy, you don't have the ability to cross. But now today, we are recognizing something very different. A famous Norwegian Scandinavian scientist named Thor Heyerdahl was able to cross the Atlantic Ocean. This was around 1962. He crossed leaving Safi in Morocco, and he landed in Barbados in the West Indies without using major sails. He did not use the winds. He used the currents. And so there was a natural force within the ocean that we call the currents that literally pulls across people going across the Atlantic. If you look at the map from the west coast of Africa to Brazil, you'll see that there is not a great distance in between. If you study the currents, you will see that currents naturally take you across either from North Africa, coming around and into the West Indies, or they can take you from the west coast of Africa and land you naturally into Brazil. And so with this understanding, we look at the history of movement. The currents are able to take you across. There is no need for major technology. And what Thor Heyerdahl did to also confirm this is that he used indigenous materials from Africa, and he used papyrus in the building of the boats, even to prove that the ancient Egyptians could have come across. So there should be no doubt in our minds that the Muslims were able to cross the Atlantic and to reach into the Americas. Now, when we look at history again from Islamic sources, we go to Al-Umari. And he, in his work, Masalik al-Absar fi Mamalik al-Amsar, it is the journey of enlightened people into the kingdoms and empires of the world. Al-Umari brings a report of a great ruler coming from Mali named Mansa Musa, who in 1324 made pilgrimage to Mecca with close to 72,000 followers. But what is important about this report, brought in his book, Masalik al-Absar, is that Mansa Musa, when being interviewed by the Muslim scholars in Egypt, Mansa Musa informs them that his predecessor, the Amir, or the Mansa who preceded him, Abu Bakr, crossed into the Atlantic with 2,000 ships. He left the coast of Senegal, and he never returned. Archaeologists, scientists have found in Central America heads, sculpted heads, that show the presence of West African Mandinka Muslims. It is shocking to see this information. A study was done about Mandinka writing, and they found this writing all along the Amazon, leading them into Peru, and then into Central America. It went right up into the United States. And Harvard University professor Leo Weiner, in his book Africa and the Discovery of America, confirmed this fact and confirmed the presence of Muslims who had gone across, and artifacts and goods that were shared by the people going either way. These Mandinka Muslims, known for their ability to travel and their love of long journeys, must have journeyed along the Amazon. They made it into Peru, and from there into Panama. And it is reported when Balboa, the Spanish conqueror, reached into Panama, into Central America, he found dark-skinned people with beards. And he was told by the lighter-complexioned Hispanic people that these people are very dangerous, and they live in the interior. Go the other way. So Gomara, the reporter, says that Balboa and his people went the other way. What we are finding out now is that these are the descendants of African Muslims who left the coast of West Africa and who traveled into this region. Leo Weiner, in his book, Africa and the Discovery of America, confirms this. The reports of the Mandinka writing in America confirms this. And it is shocking to find, when it speaks about America, drawings along with the Mandinka writing. And the drawings say, with the writing, the elephants are tired. There are numerous birds. It is extremely hot. And so the Muslim Mandinka traveled throughout Central America and into what is now known as the southwest of the United States. They traveled up the Mississippi, and they actually met the native people, and they mixed with the native populations in the Americas. Leo Weiner brings out also root words, and he brings out bits of agriculture that was shared between the peoples of the Americas and the people of Africa and the Old World. Shocking information has come out of Central America as well that shows, even within the language of the people, that they were using terms such as jaras, guabas, elmamis to describe these African Muslims who were living in Central America. The word elmamis is a Mandinka word which originally comes from Arabic. The Arabic word al-imam becomes al-imamu, and then it becomes elmamis. And so we find that African Muslims were able to make it into this region. Recently, a series of sculpted heads were brought out of the ground and put into universities in Mexico. And it's shocking to look at the sculpture within these heads. We find West African Muslim features. We also find on one of these sculptures a turban and a cap. This is the way of the Muslims. The Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, had his followers to wear a cap and a turban. And the Mandinka Muslims were known for the wearing of this cap and this turban. So it is shocking to find now this information excavated from the earth. We also find, within these heads that are being excavated, we find scarification on the face of some of these people. And this is something which is well known also in West Africa, as the scars themselves become almost like a passport that takes you from one section of West Africa into another. So the West African Muslims were able to interact with the people of that region. When we look at the language of the people of the Caribbean, we find words such as guanine. And guanine was the word being used for gold. So when Columbus and his people now come into the region, and they're asking for gold, the people bring them forth this guanine. What is shocking to find today, that the gold that was brought out to Columbus had the same alloy, it was the same mixture of metals that was found in West Africa. So these West African Muslims, who were so skilled in the minting of gold, because the largest gold mines in the world were located in their lands, must have passed on this information to the native people living in the Americas. So guanine is coming from Ghana, Ghina, which in Arabic denotes riches. It goes from Ghana into Kane or Ganin in the Mandinka language, and then guanine in the Central American Caribbean languages. So when Christopher Columbus discovered America, as they say, he actually bumped into a land that was populated by people from over 20,000 years. His son Ferdinand Columbus, who actually was the first of his group to go onto the mainland, discovered in Mexico hanging gardens. He discovered philosophy. He discovered a calendar system which was similar to the system used by the ancient Egyptians. So there is strong proof that the ancient Egyptians from the Nubian period, the pharaohs of the Nubian period, were able to actually cross the Atlantic, and they also mixed in with the people. It is shocking to find in the same region pyramids similar to the Temple of Saqqara in Egypt. It is shocking also to find green pieces of minerals put into the mouths of the dead, similar to the ancient Nubians. And so the Muslims were following a series of explorers who crossed the Atlantics. What is important today for the people of Central America is that this history should come out to the world. And there is a group known as the Garifuna people, known as the Black Caribs, who live on the shores of Central America, in Belize, in Costa Rica, in Honduras, in Colombia. They also were living in St. Vincent and Grenada and the islands of the Caribbean. We are now connecting them to the early Mandinka settlers. They are not slaves who were brought during the European slavery period. They are fighting for their rights, and they want to now seek their identity in West Africa and also their rights as an indigenous people. This is part of the shocking history as we unfold untold stories from world history. Let us continue and gain more gems of wisdom as I leave you in peace. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you.